As Israel's war on Lebanon continues and Israeli troops clash with Lebanese Hezbollah fighters, different narratives are competing for world attention. Dimitri Lascaris is a freelance journalist who has written about conflicts in the Middle East. KGVM contributor David Rosenberg spoke with him a few weeks ago when the death toll was lower and Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah hadn't yet been killed.
What do you make of the competing narratives? I guess this is typical where the Israelis seem to be saying we have to do this in order to shore up our northern border and make sure our people get back to their homes in northern Israel, and Hezbollah saying that we're going to keep fighting until you withdraw from Gaza, that kind of thing. And meanwhile, it looks like a full-scale war is about to break out if it hasn't already. What do you make of those competing narratives?
Well, there really is no reason to believe, in my view, that Hezbollah is motivated by anything other than a desire to stop the genocide. I think that's really all this is about. It's taken quite significant losses. As far as I can tell, and as far as most observers can tell, it's quite transparent about the number of casualties it sustained, at least the numbers who are killed. I haven't seen any numbers as to the wounded, but they've suffered, according to their own admission, losses of about 550 men, including numerous senior commanders, and they've admitted to this. There's no doubt that their military capability has been degraded to some degree. It would be shocking if they hadn't, given this level of bombardment that they have sustained and that South Lebanon has sustained. So what do they have to gain, especially when you consider that the country is already in a deep economic crisis, Lebanon, suffering from hyperinflation? Before the war, ordinary Lebanese could only access electricity for several hours a day. If they want more than that, they have to have generators. As a result, the air is heavily polluted. The port was destroyed, the port of Beirut, in a cataclysmic explosion. So it just doesn't seem like there's anything to be gained on the part of Hezbollah other than the honor of, contributing to a cessation of the genocide. On the Israeli side, I think they're telling the truth insofar as the return of the Israelis who lived in the north of the country is concerned. I think they are quite serious about not coming back. There have been countless reports in the Israeli media with people from the north being quoted saying there are no circumstances under which I will take my family back to, Kiryat Shemona or any of the other towns and villages bordering on Lebanon, unless Hezbollah is moved to the north of the Litani River. But what is being left out of the Israeli narrative is that the easy way to stop the hostilities on the northern border is to stop the killing in Gaza. That's what they're not acknowledging. And that is the key to all of this.
And are they saying also that the Lebanese government needs to rein in Hezbollah and kind of minimize it as a political force?
I don't think that the Israeli government, I know that they've said such things. I don't think that they believe that the Lebanese government can rein in Hezbollah. It's obvious to any reasonable observer who spent a lot of time in Lebanon recently, as I have, that the Lebanese army is incapable of disarming Hezbollah. They simply do not have the ability to do it. And many of the people in the Lebanese army are Shia Muslims who are themselves sympathetic to Hezbollah. And the country has had quite enough of civil war. At a bare minimum, that's what would happen if the Lebanese army tried to disarm Hezbollah or force it to the north of the Litani River. So that's just not going to happen. And I don't think the Israelis believe it's going to happen.
The Israelis will always refer to Hezbollah as an Iran proxy. What is Iran's role here, if any?
I think it's very clear that Iran has given considerable support to Hezbollah. They provided military technologies. They've actually provided munitions. Although I do think Hezbollah has developed its own missile production capability with the help of the Iranians and their technologies. They have received extensive military training. When I was in South Lebanon, I was shown sites that formerly served as military bases where the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, I was told this by Hezbollah supporters, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard had been training the Hezbollah militants in the early years of the organization. But at the same time, I don't think that this is simply an appendage of the Iranian state, Hezbollah. They do have a degree of independence. And Hassan Nasrallah right now, amongst Shia Muslims, is a person now amongst Shia Muslims and probably a significant segment of the Sunni Muslim population, a person of considerable stature. And so too is the organization he represents, whatever we may think of it in the West. It has paid a heavy price to establish itself as a formidable fighting force. It helped in a critical way the government of Bashar al-Assad remain in power. So it is, I think, essentially an independent actor, but it would take quite a bit for it to part company from the wishes of the Iranian government on a matter of major importance. So I think they are very much aligned, but it's a mischaracterization to view Hezbollah as a mere proxy of the government of Iran.
So both Iran and Hezbollah have said they don't want a wider regional war. And on the other side, it seems like Israel does want that war and they want the U.S. to get involved in it. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, up until now, even though both sides acknowledge that Hezbollah has experienced considerably greater casualties and that the Lebanese civilian population has incurred far greater casualties than on the Israeli side. And the level of destruction of civilian infrastructure, I saw myself when I was there repeatedly in the south of Lebanon, quite extensive destruction of civilian infrastructure. Hezbollah has not used any of its most sophisticated weapons, the guided long-range missiles with a large explosive charge. And the Israeli military acknowledges this, that they've held them back.
That's even after the explosions with the pagers and the walkie-talkies.
Yes, they did fire two types of missiles after the pager attack that they hadn't previously fired. But those are kind of their mid-level missiles. They were using only their lower-level missiles before. They were using essentially Katyusha rockets and occasionally another type of modified rocket called a Burkan missile. But they were confining themselves to their lower-level missile systems, and now they have progressed to the mid-level and are firing as far as the outskirts of Tel Aviv, I understand. But the big guns, they have not yet pulled them out, despite all the things that have been done on the Israeli side to provoke them. So I think they are exercising, and also they really have focused upon military installations in their attacks, many of which are documented by video. On the Israeli side, however, I think there's a recognition amongst the Israeli military elite that in order for them to defeat Hezbollah decisively and eliminate them as a threat, if that can be done at all, they absolutely require the intervention of the United States military.
Israeli ground troops wouldn't be enough.
Oh, no, not at all. I've heard many military experts say this, but most recently, Larry Wilkerson, you know, the former chief of staff, retired colonel in the U.S. military. He just gave an interview on YouTube in which he said that in 2006, the Israeli military was defeated, although they tried to characterize it as something else. It was a humiliating defeat, and that now Hezbollah is considerably stronger, whereas the Israeli military, which is not constructed for long-term attritional warfare, it's designed to conduct kind of blitzkrieg warfare, which is essentially what NATO does, and that there is almost no prospect whatsoever of them defeating Hezbollah. The best case scenario, he said, which I completely agree with, is a bloody stalemate, a terrible bloody stalemate. And I think even if they introduced 10,000, 20,000 Marines into the equation, U.S. Marines, I think what would happen is that Hezbollah would incur considerably greater losses, but the number of casualties on the U.S. side would be so significant that the public would be in an uproar. So I just don't think they're going to be able to destroy Hezbollah. Does that mean they're not going to destroy Lebanon? No, they might actually destroy Lebanon. And they might do it with the assistance of the U.S. military if the matters escalate to that level.
So how would you compare what's going on now to the Israeli incursions in the past? Was it 1982? And you just mentioned 2006?
Thus far, the level of destruction in Lebanon is not as great as either of those conflicts. Not even, I think, nearly as great. But it can get there real fast. So it would only take, you know, I think a few weeks of intensive bombardment, especially using Israel's larger munitions for, you know, much of Lebanon to lie in a state of ruin. So we're not quite there yet, and hopefully that won't happen. But there's one respect in which this war is absolutely unlike any other war that Israel has been involved in Lebanon, and that is for a year, Hezbollah, a capable military force, has been attacking Israeli military bases anywhere from about 10 to 15 times a day for a year, and Israel has not invaded. This is without precedent. And it says, speaks volumes that the Israeli military has tolerated this level of attacks on its facilities all across northern Israel, some of which have, you know, caused considerable damage without any kind of a ground invasion.
So why do you think that is? Do you think it's because they feel like it's too risky?
Absolutely. You know, I think that they're deeply concerned. I mean, there was a retired brigadier general by the name of Yitzhak Brik. He's been writing extensively in the Israeli media, both in English language and in Hebrew, saying that a ground invasion in Lebanon will be a complete catastrophe for Israel and possibly will cause the collapse of the state. There is a former senior Mossad official, who his name escapes me for the moment, but he also was writing in the Israeli media making similar warnings. Various U.S. military experts, including not just Lawrence Wilkerson, but others, such as Scott Ritter, Douglas McGregor, they've all opined that Israel would suffer immense casualties and almost certainly fail to expel Hezbollah from the area south of the Litani River and occupy South Lebanon. And, you know, having been there, I'll tell you, it looks like a Herculean task to me. It's a very mountainous area, which Hezbollah knows like the back of its hand. There are extensive tunnel networks that have been built up, and you're dealing with a force of potentially 100,000 men or more who are battle-hardened because of their extensive participation in the war in Syria. They have far more advanced technologies at their military technologies at their disposal than they have at any point in their history. And Israel's military has been worn out by a year of attritional warfare for which it wasn't properly designed. And it's fighting on multiple fronts at the same time. It would have to fight Hezbollah. I mean, there has been a tremendous increase in, for example, drone attacks from Iraq. I follow assiduously the statements being put out by all these resistance groups, and the Islamic resistance in Iraq has fired more drones at Israel in, I think, the last 3 days than it had in the prior 2 or 3 months. And at least one of those drones struck a target in Eilat, a port facility, and caused extensive damage. So Israel is in no condition to take on Hezbollah. It would have to be in tip-top shape, and it would have to focus all of its resources on that war. It is worn out and its resources are dispersed across multiple fronts.
The U.S. Has said on a number of occasions it's interested in peace and stability in the Middle East, and yet the U.S. continues to support Israel when it's been suggested that a 30-second phone call from the president could put a stop to it, you know, just by shutting off the weapon supply. So why do you think that the U.S. persists in its unconditional support of Israel?
Because I think it wants Israel to achieve its objectives, as simple as that. A lot has been said in the past year.
Which would be to destroy Hamas.
Destroy the Palestinian people. I think the Biden administration, I'm talking here about the key decision makers, whoever they may be in the administration, there are probably dissenters, I'm sure there are. Not only in the White House.
People have resigned, that's true.
Yes, and I'm sure there are others who thought about it but haven't. But I believe, all indications are, I can't read Biden's mind or Blinken's mind or Sullivan's mind, but all indications are, from my perspective, that they want Israel to succeed in ethnically cleansing Palestine of Palestinians. And they want Israel to destroy Hezbollah. And they want the Iranian government to be fatally weakened, if not overthrown entirely. I think that that is absolutely their objective. And the only reason why we're constantly hearing these ad nauseum claims that they're trying to diffuse tensions and prevent escalation is because their domestic constituency would not tolerate a devastating war in West Asia if they felt that it had been provoked by their own government or by their ally Israel. So they're trying to create a situation in which they can plausibly say to the American people that their hand was forced by an extraordinarily aggressive and dangerous axis of resistance in West Asia. That's what they've been trying to orchestrate. And so far, you know, Iran and Hezbollah have not taken the bait.
Well, I remember for years, maybe I guess they're still saying this, they would say Iran is the biggest state sponsor of terrorism in the world, even though there may have been no evidence for that. They just kept repeating it. And I guess once you repeat things enough and they're not challenged, then people believe it. Is that your impression?
That's certainly, there's certainly truth to that. Personally, and I've said this many times, I think the biggest state sponsor of terrorism in the world is the United States government. And It pains me to say that because my government, I can't even call it my government anymore. The government of Canada and the government of Greece, I'm a citizen in both of these countries, are merely vassals of a U.S. government that readily employs terrorism in order to achieve its political objectives. That's the truth. I mean, all you have to do is look at the dead and wounded civilians whose lives were taken by the violence of the U.S. military and by the proxies of the U.S. government. They are far greater in number, vastly greater in number, than the civilians killed by any organization designated as a terrorist organization by Western states. And the civilian infrastructure that's been destroyed is vastly greater than any civilian infrastructure destroyed by any organization designated as a terrorist organization by the United States. So I think it's preposterous when the U.S. government and its allies point the finger at organizations like Hezbollah and Hamas and, you know, the government of Iran and say, you're terrorists. You know, have they done things that could be argued persuasively to constitute terrorism according to the Western definition of terrorism? Absolutely. But the scale of their terrorism, it's miniature compared to that of the United States government and its allies and proxies.
I guess that's the genius of the American political socialization process and the media reports that convince people that it's a good and benevolent country.
Yes, yes. Amazing that people still believe that. It really, it's a testimony to the brilliance of the U.S. propaganda system. It's a marvel to behold.
Yeah, what you believe is, you know, so dependent on where you get your information.
100%.
That's freelance journalist and lawyer Dmitry Laskaris speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on October 14th, 2024.